So when you're negotiating, there's at least seven little things you can do. I call these the lucky seven basic steps of negotiating. Number one, when you're negotiating, always tell the truth. And not telling something that you know is also lying. The transmission really didn't slip when you just test drove this car I'm selling, but it has been slipping for the last 3 weeks. Whew. Wrong answer. You just got to look at them and go, look, this transmission's slipping a little bit. It's part of the deal. That's why I've got the car priced the way it is. You're probably going to have to do a little work on that. That's part of the process of always telling the truth. How many of you have ever heard the book by Tom Stanley, The Millionaire Next Door? Raise your hand. It's a great book. If you haven't read it, by the way, you ought to read it. It's the consummate study of millionaires. Tom Stanley was a marketing professor at Georgia State University, and he went all across America studying millionaires and the attributes of people that are millionaires. Now, I've established early and often in Financial Peace University that if you want to be rich people, you got to do rich people stuff. If you're broke and you want to be rich, do rich people stuff. If you're big and you want to be skinny, do skinny people stuff. Right? If your marriage isn't going good, find somebody who's been married 62 years, take them to coffee and learn about how to be married. You know, you find somebody that's winning at something and do what they're doing to be what they are. Does that make sense? Say yes.
Yes.
Okay. Now, what Tom Stanley did in his second book was called The Millionaire Mind. And in that book, what he did was he didn't study millionaires. He studied people that at least had $10 million. 10 millionaires, deca millionaires, and at least had a $750,000 a year personal income and had maintained that over an extended period of time. Now, these are people that make $750,000 a year and have at least $10 million and have done this for many years, and he wanted to sit down and study them, and he studied the attributes, the character qualities of these super winners. By the way, statistically, they are in the top 0.25% of Americans. A very rare animal indeed. And he studied how these rare animals work, how they think. And he came up with 38 character qualities or things that they had in their lives, and he ranked them according to most likely to be there every time. Number one was the thing that was there every time, all the way down to 38, which appeared the least number of times as he studied these people. I was real happy to see that, you know, you didn't have to have a 4.0 GPA to be there. Wasn't even in the top 10. Thank goodness I got a chance. But the interesting thing to me was the number one characteristic of these very, very wealthy people, when he talked to their employees, when he talked to their vendors, when he talked to their family, their wife, their husband, their kids, when he talked to their in-laws, when he talked to their neighbors, when he talked to people who didn't even know them up close and personal but knew them by reputation, in every single case, not one exception of the people he studied, every single one of them, so this attribute became number one. These people had fanatical levels of integrity. Fanatical levels of integrity. Off the scale integrity. If you want to win in life, the truth is the best way. I know television doesn't tell us that, but it really, really is. So always tell the truth. Now, Of course, going around the country, I've taught, you know, financial things for years. I'm on the radio in my city for over a couple of decades almost now. And one of the things I teach people, you probably know this if you've read anything I've written or anything else, is that I teach people don't buy extended warranties. Don't buy extended warranties. Extended warranties are a rip. So when you're going to buy a washer and dryer or a television or a stereo or whatever, and they want to put the warranty on there, that warranty is about 50 to 60% commission. Only 12% of it covers the actuarial statistical probability of the item breaking down. And so self-insure through that. Put that money in your pocket and use your emergency fund, because believe me, almost all of that is profit and marketing. It's a way for the salesman on the floor to make a little kick. And that's what it amounts to. So I've told people for years, don't buy extended warranties. I've not bought extended warranty in 20-something years. So my wife and I are shopping just the other day for a major appliance right in our own neighborhood. And we go down to this electronics store, this appliance store that we like, that we do business with, and I've bought stuff there many times. And I walk in the door, and we're looking at the item, and we're talking about it, and finally we say, well, I want the open box special, you know, how you go through this whole thing. You got one with a little scratch on the side. And he comes back, and he said, well, I got one that's a last year's model. What's the difference? Almost nothing, and we want the last year's model. Well, it's not the color she wants. I don't care what the color is. It's an appliance. We're not going to see it. And so we are going through this thing. We're getting ready to make a deal. And I said, look, here's the deal. I pay cash for things, and I want to bargain. And he says, well, I'll be back in just a minute. And he comes back in a few minutes. He says, well, I've got these coupons here, and they don't apply to this purchase, but if you're going to pay cash and you want a deal, you know, we're getting this last year's model open box thing, but we'll even let the coupons apply. And this was a several $1,000 purchase, and it was a $250 coupon. I'm going, oh, you're generous. Keep it coming. And he says, well, I got to talk to you about something else. He says, you need the extended warranty. And I said, well, I don't buy extended warranties, and I don't believe in them. I don't think they're a good buy, and we don't do that. And my wife says, well, honey, it might break down. And I said, where have you been? You know, when I've taught about 3 or 4 other million other people not to buy them, where were you? You know, we don't buy extended warranties. She's just trying to be nice. She doesn't want to do conflict. The little guy's obviously hurt that we wouldn't buy his extended warranty. And he says, he goes on, well, you need to cover. I said, well, is the thing going to break down? Is it a piece of trash? And he said, well, no, it's one of the best items made, Consumer Reports, so and so. I said, well, what do I need the extended warranty for? And he's like, well. He said, I tell you what, Dave Ramsey buys extended warranties. I thought he knew who I was, and I thought he was kidding around. And I started grinning. I said, no, Dave Ramsey doesn't buy extended warranties. Dave Ramsey, I can promise you, Dave Ramsey doesn't buy extended warranties. Well, now he gets all puffed up and he takes an act. I start to realize this guy doesn't know who he's talking to. And he's like, yes, he does. He was in here the other day. He bought a television in this very store and he put an extended warranty on it. My ears are now red. My head is starting to change colors all the way back. And my wife said, honey, you're red. And I said, well, let me just try to explain this to you. I can promise you, I know Dave Ramsey personally. He does not buy extended warranties. Oh, I can show you the paperwork. And so I just pulled my license out of my pocket and held it up in front of his face. And I said, he doesn't either. And he looked at it and he went, oh, no. I'm so sorry. And I said, well, yeah, you are. And Sharon, he's like, well, we can get you a deal, Dave. I promise you. And I'm like, look, man, I'm sorry. I can't breathe right now. When people lie about me, it just messes with me. I can't even breathe. And Sharon's like, well, we'll work this out. I said, we're not working nothing out, honey. I said, I'm going to say something I'm going to regret. And so what I have to do is right now is I have to quickly leave this store. And I held my breath and you know, and I didn't kill anybody, and I didn't transfer it and yell at my wife. I was really proud of myself, and I just left the store, and we went to another place and actually paid more because there was no way those people were getting my money. No way. I waited overnight. I called the next morning. I was calm and collected, and I was very gentle and nice, and the manager's like, oh, yeah, we heard what happened. Please don't talk about it on the radio. It's like, I said, dude, this is the best story in the universe. It will be talked about. And I said, but he said, well, listen, we've sent out a memo to everybody in the entire chain. It will never be said again. I promise you. We looked up the file. He was wrong. We told him wrong, and it won't be ever done again. We promise, we promise, we promise, we promise, we promise. And I wasn't mean to him at all. I'm not a bully. And I just said, well, that's cool. Thank you very much. And I appreciate you. We'll do business with you again since you've corrected this error, and we like you guys. And he said, well, if you come back down here, I can get you a deal on that. And I said, no, we bought it somewhere else because I just couldn't stay there. I couldn't breathe at that moment. But integrity matters, doesn't it? Yes. When you lie, it costs you. That's real. There is no shortcut. That's the deal. The second thing is, if you want to do the lucky 7 steps to negotiating, is you have to use the power of cash. Cash is powerful. Now, we talked about this in the debt lesson. We said in the debt lesson that if you spend cash, it hurts. It registers pain with you. And it causes you to not want to spend it. You carry Uncle Ben around a little while. It's like, Uncle Ben, he's part of the family, right? I don't want to lose you. Stay with me. You know, and you, it hurts, so it makes you stop and think, doesn't it? And that's one of the ways it saves you money. But it is a good negotiating tool, because when you hold up cash, cash is emotional, isn't it? You just kind of walk around the store. You know, they'll line up behind you, won't they? Hey, you know. When I'm thinking, I want a deal. And the other thing when you're using cash is it's very visual. Now, my wife, Sharon, she doesn't like all this stuff. It's too confrontational to her. She's like, you embarrass me. That's just one of the side benefits of doing all this stuff. Cash has immediacy. If I walk up to you and I'm getting ready to buy something and I put down 10 $100 bills and I say, I'm going to make you a $1,000 offer, you're not going to worry about whether my credit card's going to clear. You know I don't have to talk to my bank or pull my credit bureau report. It's a deal. It's immediate. It's a lock. It's visual. It's emotional. And it is a happening thing. If I lay it down there, I'm going to get a deal, period, that way. Well, I'm talking to the manager now, you know, at the appliance store. Same thing, I'm trying to buy a television. I'm going into one of these electronic stores, and we all know what they are, and I'm standing there going, I want a deal, look into my eyes. And he's going, well, Mr. Ramsey, we're a retail establishment, we don't really negotiate here. I said, yeah, well, you know, under what circumstances are there bargains? Well, sometimes, you know, we have an item that's a display item, and we have an open box special, so open a box. Right? Well, I just don't know. I don't know. Are you sure? Because if we don't do a deal here, then I'm going to have to go see if those other people really have the best buy. You know, you got to have some fun with this, people. You got to have some fun with it. I remember one time several years ago, our kids were small and we were busy running around, and I did the unpardonable sin. I forgot Mother's Day. Yeah, you know how bad this is. We go to church and they're handing out roses to all the women. I'm going, what are the roses for? Oh, no. Oh, no. So we're walking up through the parking lot after church with the kids in tow, and I'm going, honey, the kids and I have been talking about your Mother's Day gift, and we've just decided whatever you want, we're just going to go get it right now. And she's like, you forgot, didn't you? So whatever you want, we're going to go get it right now, right? And so she said, I know what I want. She said, we've got that old beat-up washer and dryer that we've had ever since we got married, and it was used when we got it, and we have to kick it to make it run. And she said, I'm sick and tired of that. I want a brand new top-line washer and dryer. And I said, okay, I'm doing it in my mind. I'm going, how bad did that be? That's like $500, $600, $700. You know, it can't be this bad, right? And so we go, and I said, okay, we're going to go down and look at the scratch and dent store. She said, you didn't hear me. I said, brand new. You're going to pay, Bubba. So we go into the store, honestly, truth story, went into the appliance store, and she walks in, and she walks down the aisle past all of the others and walks down to the end and says, I want that one. She had been there before. She had been planning this. I go down there and I look at it. This thing, I mean, it makes sandwiches at halftime. Who knew a washer and dryer could be this expensive? I'm looking at it and I put them all together. We sit down with the little guy at the little round table and he's seeing the kids. It's Mother's Day. He knows he's got everyone, right? And this is going to be a hard negotiation. This is going to be tough. And he says, yeah, he says he adds it all up, taxes, title, delivery, everything. He's like $1,298 actual dollars. For a washer and dryer? You're kidding me. And he went, no, sir, that's how much it is. And I said, well, actually, I don't have $1,298. But what I do is I have nine of these. One. Two, and she kicked me under the table. Three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. I laid nine of them on the table. I said, nine, that's all I can do. And he said, well, I can't do that. And I said, well, who can? He said, well, that would be the manager. I said, talk to the manager. She kicked me again. He walked off. She said, you don't need another seminar story. Buy it. True story. The guy walks back over. He's got his head on down because I was kind of in pain, so I was kind of snarling. And I think he thought I was snarling at him. And he came back over and he had his head down. He says, I can't do 900. He said, the lowest the manager let me go is 935. Well, now I'm having fun. I'm going, you're going to let me, with all the advertising dollars you put out to get people in here on Mother's Day, you're going to let me walk out the door for 35 bucks. She kicked me again. I said, we'll take it. $12.98 for 935 is not bad, though. Why? Just because we tried. The next of the lucky seven is understand and use walk-away power. You have to emotionally be able to walk away and not purchase the item. If you are emotionally married to the item, your body language changes, the tilt of your head changes, your vocal cords constrict, the use of words changes, the sentence structure changes, and people can tell you have bought. Even those of you that are not trained sophisticatedly in body language can just watch and go, that one bought. You know what I'm talking about? You can feel it, can't you? And people can feel it. And so when you lose your walkaway power, you lose the ability to negotiate. This is a big deal. You have to keep your emotional distance from the item in order to be able to let them know. They have to be able to feel that they're losing you and they want to reel you back in as you go through this negotiating process. That is a big, big, big deal. I had a guy call me one time with one of these dot-com companies that we had been working with, and the dot-com company went broke. Now there's a shock. And before it went broke, they had just furnished this fabulous office with literally hundreds of these, well, probably a little less than 100 of these Steelcase brand, which is a top brand of office furniture, cubicles, and all these beautiful chairs and all the accessories all through this place, and a fabulous, fabulous conference room, all done up. I mean, some serious wood stuff. I mean, gorgeous stuff, right? And he says, Dave, I just wrote a check for this. Nobody's even sat in these seats. And now we turned around and we didn't get our funding from our venture capitalist and we're going to have to turn the key on it. I got to sell it. I said, man, I don't need all this stuff. I don't even have that many people working here. It won't even all fit in our office. He said, but you don't understand. I'm going to make somebody a deal. And I'm like, really? I don't need all this stuff. And he said, listen, don't make me an offer because you're going to own it. And I went, okay, I'm starting to need this stuff. So I sat down with our executive VPs, and there were only about 40 of us at that time working on our team. Now there's several hundred of us, right? But at that time, I said, well, okay, guys, this guy says he gave me the tickets on it. It's $275,000 worth of furniture. That's a lot. And I said, at what price, guys, would we buy this that if we didn't buy it at that price, we would feel stupid? Because we really don't need it. We're going to have to put it in storage until we grow enough to use it. Or we're going to have to try to sell it and make money on it. We're not in the furniture business, so we're not doing that. So what are we going to do here? And so we fooled around. We all talked it out. And finally, I said, look, and one of the guys said, okay, we settled on a price, $23,500. And I said, he'll never take it, but at least if it's more than that, we don't want to pay for something we don't really need today much more than that, but it's a great buy. And so I called him up, and I really did have walkaway power because I really didn't care if he sold it to me or not because I didn't really need it. You see what I'm saying? At that time, if you visit our offices today, it's in there because he took $23,500. That's a deal. But I think a lot of that had to do with I didn't care, and it was all in my spirit. You know what I'm saying? He could feel that I didn't care. And I wasn't trying to beat the guy up. He's the one said, make me an offer. I wasn't shopping for this, but he drew me in with price. And a lot of that was walkaway power. I've taught my wife, I've taught my kids this stuff, and we live this way as a family. And because my wife is a typical Southern belle, non-confrontational, will cut your throat. You know what I'm saying. And say, bless your heart about the, you know what I'm saying. Bless your heart means a lot of things you don't want to know. I mean, and so... you know, but all this stuff to her feels like confrontation, all this negotiating stuff. And so we were kind of playing with it. I said, here's what you do, try this. And we were at the flea market, and she was looking for this iron bed that she was going to paint up, and an antique bed thing, and put it in one of the kids' rooms. She had this plan, and we go down, and she's like, over there's the bed. Now, what do I do? That's the one I want. And I said, okay, here's what you do. Number one, don't get married to it. Maintain your walkaway power. And do these things. And just play with it. Just have fun with it. Here's some cash. Go over there and try to do it. I mean, the guy was asking like $20 for the bed or something. I don't know what it wasn't much. I mean, I thought by the time she finished with the guy, he was going to pay her. I mean, she wore him out over that bed. And so she's all feeling like, hey, I got this stuff down. And we're walking down through there. And way down the aisle down there is the wicker patio furniture that we had been needing. She forgot everything she had just learned. And for 45 feet towards this wicker furniture, it looks like a woman running through a wheat field. Her body language, you know what I'm saying? The way she walked up to it said, you got me. And then she caught herself and stopped and said, oh no, I need a deal. And by now the guy's just grinning, going, there's no deal happening here. We had to completely walk away from the furniture because there was no negotiation. Based on the way she walked up to it, you know what I'm talking about? This stuff, you have to maintain your emotional distance, your walkaway power in order to get a deal. The fourth one is shut up. You talk too much. You want to start negotiating over the orange. Shut up. Ask a question. Gather information. Shut up. Don't enter the fray too quickly. Somebody says, I'm offering $5,000 for this, just nod and smile. It's powerful, isn't it? Silence is something there's not much of in this culture. I mean, you don't have to be unpleasant, just look at them. And they'll start looking around. They'll go, okay, I'll take $4,500. They'll start coming down on their price, and you haven't done anything but grin. The worst thing was I went on this used car lot one time. I was just out kicking around. I was having fun. Saturday morning, I'm out cruising around. I saw this little Jeep, and I thought, that little Jeep looks kind of cool. I pull up, and I get out of my car, and I'm looking at the Jeep, and I thought, I'm going to try this just to see how far you can take it. And it was really uncomfortable for me because I took it a little too far. I mean, because the guy's coming around. He comes out, bounding out of there. You know, he's talking. He's been in the coffee. You know, he can't shut up. And I'm just standing there looking. And he says, how you doing? And I said, never said a word. Just kind of, I acknowledged him, but I mean, I thought, I'm going to see what happens if I just say nothing. And I'm walking around it, and he says, yeah, we're asking $5,500, but the manager said for us to get some stuff sold. I bet you I can get you a deal on this. I'll bet you I can get, I mean, I think I can probably, right now, I could go to $4,500. And I'm just standing there. And I'm walking around it, and he goes, maybe, he said, if you want to put on payments, he said, we can work that out. He said, I can do anything. He said, probably get you some different wheels. And I got a friend down at the tire store, and if you did a deal this morning, I bet you I could get you some big tires on it if you want to do a mudding thing on this Jeep. He said, I bet you I can. And he's just, yeah, he's just giving me stuff. You know what I'm saying? And I'm just kind of grinning, going. Finally, he says, I can tell a man like you knows what he's looking at with a car, and you can tell this car's been hit. If you'll just be quiet. I mean, it was an uncomfortably long silence. I was almost rude to the guy. But it was amazing. He just kept, you know? And price enters into that discussion, too. And other things will enter into that discussion that you could negotiate for that would make the deal sweet to you. Price isn't the only thing that makes a deal sweet, is it? Sometimes color, quantity, sometimes delivery. Other things make a deal sweet. So just learn to, it's okay. There's a dramatic pause when you shut up. Especially if you just ask a question like, is that price firm? And then don't say another word till they just keep, and if they ask a question, just kind of smile, nod, and don't answer it. Because people don't do conflict, and a lot of people view this process as a process of conflict, and they'll come down. Use the phrase, that's not good enough. That is a powerful phrase. If they say $5,000 for this car, you say, that's not good enough. They say $50,000 for that car, you say, that's not good enough. They say, we can do delivery by Friday, you say, that's not good enough. That phrase comes from an excellent negotiator, by the way, named Henry Kissinger. It's a phrase he has used a lot. according to his book, and a lot of multinational, international negotiating with diplomats, world-class negotiator. And when pages and when interns and when staff would bring a report in, put it on his desk, he'd say, that's not good enough. And they'd go back and work on it some more, and they'd bring it in again. He'd say, that's not good enough. And they'd come in all frustrated and say, that is all there is to know on this subject. He said, good, now that I have your best work, I'll read it. He sent them back out the door several times. That's not good enough. That's not good enough. That's not good enough. Very, very powerful phrase, especially if you say that and then you put it back with that last one, shut up. That's not good enough. Smile and be quiet. You're going to see some powerful, fun things happen. Now, this also can be used on you, so you need to be aware. That is a phrase you'll hear collectors use. If you're behind on your bills and you have a collector calling you and no matter what you offer them, if you want to pay the full balance off on the spot, they'll come up with something and say, that's not good enough, we got to add fees. They will come up with something. I had one time, I had a car and a boat on one note with a certain bank when I was going broke. And a lady called me on a Thursday evening. I had a real estate closing scheduled a week later on the following Wednesday. I was going to make enough on that deal to bring it current. It was 2 months behind. And I said, just that. I have a real estate closing next Wednesday. From the proceeds of that, I will be able to bring it current. Until then, I can't do anything. And she said, that's not good enough. Well, I had been studying these collectors and collections techniques. And so I just, you know, I knew that was in her script. And so I thought, well, let's try a little of this back. And I said, so? Well, that wasn't in her training. And so she just bounced off the walls, went crazy. We're going to come pick up the car. I said, you're going to pick up the car over 4 days discussion. I mean, we're talking about three business days here. If you want to pick up the car, I'll have the keys ready. What day would you like to get it? Would Friday be better for you or Monday? What? You're just going to? I said, lady, I can't manufacture money because you've learned a technique in your school that says that's not good enough. The money will be here Wednesday. If you want the car before then, you can come get it. I'll hook the boat up for you. Because, you know, I owe you guys about like $9,000 more on the pair than they're worth. Come get the stupid thing. I'm tired of you. Well, Wednesday, I guess we'll... I said, well, maybe that's not good enough. You know? So beware, because some of these techniques are being used on you. You got to watch for it. Here's one that's used on you all the time. The good guy, bad guy technique, isn't it? You see it on television. Good cop, bad cop, right? And that's kind of one that's known. But if it's done very professionally, you have to be very careful. I've got to check with my manager. For years in the car business, they used a process called position selling that was taught. And position selling was the person out there selling can't do any of the negotiating. They have to go back and talk to the manager who's back there in the booth. They keep him chained there. He has one eye in the center of his head, two fangs coming out and foam everywhere. And he's like, please don't send me back to the manager again. He's going to kill me. You know, I mean, they come up with all this drama process, and there's this mythical or real person back behind the curtain, and we have to go back and check with the other curtain. The bad guy is just out of reach, and I'm the good guy. I'm on your team. I'm over here with you. It's us against them. No, it's not. And the way you neutralize that, and by the way, I don't recommend using that as a negotiating technique. It's unless it's very true, unless you really do have to check with someone, but I wouldn't set it up as a technique. But if it's being used on you, the way to neutralize it is just go, wait a minute. I'm sorry, I've made a mistake. I came in here to negotiate. I was ready to buy something. I made the mistake. I thought you were qualified to do the deal. Apparently you're not. I'm sorry for that. I'll be happy to make sure you get your commission. But what I need to do is we need to set a time when I can talk with your manager so that I'm able to do a deal, because I don't have a qualified appointment here. And go around them and pull the guy out of the back. And even if you're dealing with a collector, my supervisor won't accept that. You know who their supervisor is? It's the idiot in the cubicle next to him. And they swap off being each other's supervisor every other call. It's really what they do. Okay? It's a technique. My supervisor won't approve it. You don't have a supervisor. If you did, you wouldn't be acting the way you're acting. You know, let's talk to the supervisor. Great, I'm sorry, I can't talk to you anymore because you don't have the ability to do this deal, and I'm walking away from this discussion. So the way you neutralize it is you circumvent them by going to the authority that's supposed to be the bad guy. The last one is the if I takeaway technique. If I were to give you $5,000 for this car, If I were to give you $168 million for this house, if I were to buy this shirt today, I need you. And you add something. You pull something else in. You take, if I close on the house by Friday, the only price I can give you is this. I'm ready to close. It's cash, and I can close the deal by Friday. We're ready because we're cash buyers. I can do it right now. I don't have to ask a mortgage company. All we got to do is run title, and we'll close that sucker Friday. You have a deal. But if I close it by Friday, this is the price. If I had a friend of mine used to buy investment property, and he used this all the time. He would walk through a home that the people were selling, and they appeared to be desperate to sell, and he would look for the item that was out of place. It was an item of pride that they obviously liked. I mean, they're living in a dump of a house, and they got a $40,000 bass boat out there, right? Or they've got they're living in a little dump of a house, and they got an $800 refrigerator. You know what I'm saying? And it's something that's out of place. And he would say, well, you know, I see that you're asking, I don't know, make up a number, $100,000 for this house. And I can buy the house for $100,000, but if I do, you're going to have to throw in that bass boat. And they'd be going, oh, no, I can't throw in the bass boat. That bass boat, you can't take my bass boat. That's my baby. You don't want my baby. I can't throw in the baby with my house. And so then the way he turned it was, is they would say all of that, and he'd say, well, if I don't take the bass boat, then what else are you going to give me? We're going to have to come off on price. As if he ever had the bass boat. See how the deal works. So if I do this, if we move forward in this way, then we're going to add this to the deal. I'm going to get a little better deal. I'm going to get a little another nibble in there.